This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Guardian.
Hi, hello. My name is Catherine.
I'm Catherine.
Hi. Lovely to meet you. I'm Jordan.
Nice to meet
and
you.
I'm Anya.
Anya, nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
How's it going?
Going
well, yeah, absolutely.
Had a good day?
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Touch is a fundamental part of human interaction. Even when our communication is mitigated by technology, as it so frequently is nowadays, it's often via some sort of touchscreen. But as far as physical interaction with other human beings in the same space, some people think we're living through a crisis of touch, especially when it comes to older people. In the UK, 500,000 older people go at least 5 days a week without coming into contact with anyone at all. But some think that we might be able to use touch-based technologies to help the more vulnerable members of our communities. As the Deputy Director of UCL's Interaction Centre, Nadia Batuz, puts it, for technology to be truly effective in our social network, it should be able to adapt to the effective needs of each user group, or even each individual. So, can sensory technologies help older people and people in care by enhancing connections between them and their loved ones?
I think in the care homes particularly, we found that it was the family members that needed this sort of thing, actually. It wasn't necessarily the residents that were suffering from dementia. It was the family members who wanted reassurance that they still had that connection with their loved ones.
Or, in focusing on creating these cool new technologies, do we run the risk of distracting from what people really need? The human touch.
You may feel that you are interacting much more closely with the person using these remote systems, but that can create a scenario where you will feel less the need for physically traveling to meet a person and interacting with them. And that can be a bad thing from a social perspective.
I'm Jordan Erica Weber, and this is Chips with Everything.
What's this making this noise over here?
This is a pair of gloves that we've made, a piece called I Want to Hold Your Hand. And they are...
In early June, an exhibition at the Bloomsbury Gallery sought to consider the potential of sensory technologies. Visitors to Remote Contact were able to interact with artwork that explores how new technologies can enhance the connection between a person in care and their family and friends.
So they measure with pressure sensors, they measure galvanic skin response, and they also measure GPS. So you can actually map a walk where you're holding hands in a number of different sort of dimensions, different data sets. So you can see here...
Catherine Baxendale is the creative producer at Invisible Flock, the interactive art studio behind the Remote Contact exhibition.
So Phil and Julie are a couple that we worked with in Liverpool. So Phil has dementia and Julie is his main carer. Every day they try and take a walk together in their local park. And they hold hands, as they have always done as a couple, through the park. And as Phil's dementia has increased in severity, he needs a wheelchair to get to the park, but they still make sure that he gets out of his wheelchair, and they even take a few, you go a few meters holding hands. And we wanted to try and find a way of capturing that, capturing how important that act of holding hands is. So we did this by creating a pair of gloves for them.
So what were the kind of goals of the exhibition? What did you want visitors to get out of it?
So we wanted to start a dialogue. We wanted to propose ideas and begin conversations. So everything's interactive in a way that we want people to do things and explore the ideas rather than say, we've got some answers here, have a look at them. Mm-hmm. We wanted people to think about the questions that we're proposing and explore them themselves and discover what their relationship to touch might be.
So I'm Kerry Jewett. I'm a professor of technology at UCL Knowledge Lab, which is a research unit within the Institute of Education, University College London.
And what are your main research interests?
At the moment, touch, how the digital remediates or shapes how we touch one another to communicate.
Okay, and have you been to see this exhibition, Remote Contact?
The exhibition's a collaboration that I have with the artist studio Invisible Flock. So I've been visiting the artists over the last couple of months, watching the exhibits get into shape.
Remote Contact, this exhibition, came about because of this collaboration, like you said, this research project In Touch. Can you tell me more about that project? What were its goals?
So In Touch, digital touch communication, is a large European Research Commission funded project which lasts for 5 years, and I'm the lead with my, I've got a small team that I work with. And the goal of the project, in a nutshell, is really to ask, what is digital touch? How is the digital changing touch? And how is that going to shape the ways in which we communicate in the next 5 to 10 years?
And this, the exhibition explores how digital touch can be used with people with dementia, right? Was that always an element of the research project, or did that come in later?
I suppose technologies find their place in a way. And touch is really important to our health and well-being. From when we're tiny babies, when we're born, we need to be touched. We need to be touched simply to develop the muscles and develop our hand-eye coordination. And through touch, we feel emotions. And that lasts for our whole lives. So touch is very key. And the idea of how the digital can come into that space and how it can reconnect us and give us different kinds of touch experience that can both physically heal and emotionally enhance our well-being is a key area for the development of these technologies.
Okay, so it kind of looks like a photo album. Oh, except the photos are being projected onto the pages. Okay, choose an object. Each object unlocks a different person's album. Oh, it's changed now. Oh, a birthday cake. And I can place an object in the circle on the table. Okay, so there's objects over here. We've got a fridge magnet of Great Yarmouth. So I'm going to choose that one. So what's the purpose of this kind of photo album, this interactive photo album?
So this is the memory album that we developed in collaboration with a care home in Liverpool called Green Haze, a community integrated care home. And we spent a lot of time talking to mainly carers and family members, trying to understand their daily lives. And what came out was that actually in this care home, which is a palliative care home, the biggest interaction and connection that people had was with their photographs. So we wanted to develop a project or a piece of work that kind of brought them together. And the idea that you can flick through a physical photograph album, but that they're digitally projected, so that actually each album can be tailored to each care, to each resident.
How does that work? How does the physical object change the album?
So we use RFID tags. So it's quite a simple piece of technology, actually, just embedded underneath the desktop there, the top of the desk.
We've heard that Nadia Berthos said for technology to be truly effective in our social network, it should be able to adapt to the effective needs of each user group or even each individual. So how important is it that research into technology like what you're doing is applied to more vulnerable people like those with dementia?
Well, I think what's important for any technology is that it needs to understand the social context it's going into. Because we don't want our technologies to shape our social context. We want our social context to shape the technology. And what's really important to have a social scientist like me working alongside wonderful colleagues at UCL like Nadia Bertus, who work within computer science, that kind of connection in which we can have conversations about what the technology can do and what we need the technology to do is vital. And also, it's so hard for people, just ordinary people, to think and talk about touch. And so what we've had to do quite a lot is think about how to research it, to ask, can a exploratory artistic research environment that they've created in the exhibition, can that give us a new route into talking and observing people's touch experiences?
Okay, and what would you say you've learned so far?
Well, normally a social scientist like me would wait until the technology's out in the wild, till everybody's using it. But I feel with these touch technologies that they really are going to have a big impact on our world. And we need to understand them in the labs. We need to get in there early with the conceptual design and development and trying to have some impact. During the exhibition, we had some drama students come in. And that was really exciting to see the ways in which they undermined and subverted the design of the technologies and did very different things that we hadn't anticipated could be done with the different exhibits, dancing around them, wearing the bands on the wrong part of their body. It was great to see, because that's what we do with technologies. People design them for us and we find different kinds of uses for them in our social worlds.
So what specific problems might a social scientist like you anticipate when digital touch technologies are used in health and care?
I think there's a lot of different ethical issues that arise when we think about any kind of technology. So I think it's thinking about issues of privacy. For example, if there was a device around digital touch that I was going to use with a vulnerable older person, I think they would have to have the rights or the facility to be able to block that touch if they didn't want to experience it. Also, maybe they've got a health condition that means it would be sometimes very uncomfortable or painful to be touched. And that could be like a psychological or a physiological health condition. So I think people need to have some control, a lot of control over when and how they're being touched, by whom. So with older people in lots of health contexts, the benefits of touching and stroking have really been shown. And so understanding the kinds of memories that you're evoking with someone and whether or not they're positive and beneficial is very key.
You told us about Phil and Julie. Is there a sense that people like them kind of need this kind of technology? Is there that desire there for something like this to help their lives?
I think in the care homes particularly, we found that it was the family members that needed this sort of thing, actually. It wasn't necessarily the residents that were suffering from dementia. It was the family members who wanted reassurance that they still had that connection with their loved ones.
So, one of Professor Jewett's roles as lead of this research project is to consider the ethical implications of digital touch technologies before or as they are created. Because it's entirely possible that technologies created to try to help a lonely generation might inadvertently lead to further isolation.
What it should not do is replace the actual physical contact and the need for meeting people on a sort of physical one-to-one basis.
We'll look into that more after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
Make space this weekend. Space for films about Chilean romance, plays about millennial angst, and poetry that makes you want to write poetry. Those new jackfruit superfood samosas, or not. A writer that's never been written about. The manager you might love, and opinions you might not. It's your weekend. Make space to be inspired. Pick up The Guardian and The Observer this weekend.
Welcome back to Chips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Before the break, I explored the idea of using digital touch technology to help people with dementia, as presented in a recent interactive exhibition called Remote Contact. We heard from Professor Kerry Jewett of University College London, who highlighted the importance of considering the ethical implications when shaping touch technologies. But we've already seen technologies developed in the name of patient care, and some have raised questions.
Hello?
Hi, Sethu. It's Jordan from The Guardian.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, very good.
Professor Sethu Vijayakumar is the director of Edinburgh University's Centre for Robotics.
So mostly I work with robots of all different kinds. So wheeled robots, static robots, quadruped robots and humanoid robots. The main emphasis of our work is applying sort of data science and machine learning techniques for smart control of these kind of robotic platforms.
I wanted to know whether older people are comfortable interacting with a robot that has been tasked with their care.
It is very insightful to see that the adoption of technology and robotics is very culture specific. So Japanese are particularly comfortable with the use of technology for very personal care. The US is, I would say, a slightly different story. So they're a lot more skeptical about the use of robotics technologies in these kind of scenarios. So UK kind of falls somewhere in between. There are other demographics, especially the Southeast Asian countries and India, for example, where still the use of these kind of technologies are still not economically viable. So it's very hard to generalize. It's very culture specific.
It seems like helping vulnerable people, you know, older people and people with illnesses would be one of the main areas that technology would be interested in. I know a lot of people are hopeful that technology can be used for that kind of thing. Can you give me some examples of digital technologies that have been used for care in the past?
More and more, we are looking at what we call smart homes. So these are homes where you use sensing and some sort of clever AI and processing to convert those various sensors. And these sensors could be monitoring human movement. It could be monitoring devices like your, you know, microwave ovens or your refrigerators or your televisions. And it is using those multiple sensing modalities to, first of all, create a pattern of, say, everyday behavior in a care home, for example. And then one of the potential applications would be to try and use this data to detect anomalies. So, for example, if a person is not feeling well, you could potentially try and predict things like strokes and cardiac arrests and stuff like that. So it will give you a supportive capacity to basically make or allow people to do the things that they would not have been able to do without, say, for example, a carer, a physical human carer in their homes.
So what kind of ethical issues might there be with those kinds of technologies then?
So in order to deliver much more customized, much more, personalized care, you need to collect very personalized data. So that reveals a lot about an individual person, whether or not that person is willing or is actively, you know, agreed to give that data out is an interesting question. There are some other aspects and more on the sort of soft and social side of things. So if you take some of the technologies and apply it to an everyday situation, like a conversational agent or, you know, a remote touch device or something like that, you may feel that you are interacting much more closely with the person using these remote systems, but that can create a scenario where you will feel less the need for physically traveling to meet a person and interacting with them. And that can be a bad thing from a social perspective. Technology has, you know, two sides of the coin, and we should always make sure that the social and the fun aspect of literally meeting somebody, touching hands, hugging them, and interacting physically with them does not go away with the digital technology.
So the exhibition we talked about in the first half, Remote Contact, explores, as it says, how creative uses of technology might enhance feelings of connection and tackle isolation. Are there any ethical risks to trying to use tech to do that kind of thing? Or maybe is there a risk that focusing on these more creative technologies can distract attention and resources away from other things we should be focusing on when dealing with this kind of thing?
So I personally believe that the technology can be very powerful to enable a much more immersive experience for many people. So if you compare the teleconferencing systems of today to the patchy phone systems from 10, 15 years ago, we can effectively hold full-fledged interactive meetings with people, and that is a good thing. So I definitely don't think that developing that kind of technology is inherently bad. What it should not do is replace the actual physical contact and the need for meeting people on a sort of physical one-to-one basis. If we use the technology with the right level of restraint in terms of enhancing current capabilities, I think that is a very good thing.
What would you like to see technology bring to the practice of caring for people?
So physically, it is getting to a stage where the ratio of carers to people who need the care is becoming completely skewed. So even if we wanted this kind of, you know, human touch and human one-on-one caring scenario, it may not be physically feasible for that to happen just because of the demographics of the way things are going. So one creative and interesting way of using technology would be to use them for doing all the sort of more mundane routine things in a caretaking situation. So it could be beds which cleaned itself, or pill dispensing systems, medicine dispensing systems that operate automatically on a routine without having a human. So this would free up the time that a carer would need for more human social and cognitive level interactions. Potentially, these people could provide the physical companionship rather than doing the more mundane jobs.
Before we sign off this week, let's dive under the sea, off the coast of Orkney, where Microsoft has just sunk a big white cylinder containing several of its computers. This data centre has been submerged in the name of energy efficiency, for which the Orkney Islands are renowned. The theory is that keeping the data centre underwater will prove a cheaper way to keep those computers cool, cutting down on energy costs. Hopefully, none of them break while they're down there. I'd like to thank Professor Kerry Jewett of UCL and Professor Setu Vijayakumar of Edinburgh University for joining me this week. Special thanks to Catherine Baxendale of Invisible Flock for taking me on a tour of the Remote Contact exhibition. There will be links to the InTouch research project led by Professor Jewett and the Centre for Robotics at Edinburgh University in this week's episode description on The Guardian website. You'll also find a link to the UCL Festival of Culture 2018, which featured the Remote Contact exhibition, alongside events on everything from sex and migration to medieval dogs. I also want to hear from you. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics for future shows, drop me a line at chipspodcast@theguardian.com. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.